jagran jana shlokaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said Sita Devi is Lakshmi, and Prabhupada very nicely spoke about how materialists are always trying to obtain Lakshmi, but they have one problem: they don't want Narayan with Lakshmi. And so Prabhupada compared the materialist with Ravana. Ravana wanted Lakshmi, Sita Devi, non-different, but he didn't want Ram. You understand? So this is a very appropriate comparison. Of course, we know that Ravana never got Sita Devi. Ravana got Maya Sita, right? The real Sita Devi was taken by Agni and kept very safe. And the Maya, the Chaya, the reflection of Sita Devi, was actually taken by the Ravana. Because actually Prabhupada explains that if Ravana had touched the real Sita Devi, he would have died immediately. There would have been no need for Ramchandra to kill him. So Sita Devi could have killed him. Not that even she wanted to, just by touching her, he would have died immediately. So anyway, so Sita Devi cannot be had, or you cannot have the mercy of Lakshmi without Narayan. You get Durga, and Durga means basically to move with great difficulty. Even though it's interesting, in Bengal they have Durga Puja, isn't it? And Durga Puja, don't they understand what Durga, the name Durga means? They never think about it? I mean, it's really amazing. People never think about the meaning of words. Durga means to, it's like the prison warden, you know, the person who ties you up. And do they ever think of why she carries the trident, the Adiyatmik, Adibodhik, and Adidaivik? No, they don't think about that. They just worship her. Anyway, but there's a very interesting story that Radharani, of course, there's this place called Gauri Kund, right near Govardhan. And Radharani would sometimes go there to worship Durga. Hmm. And of course, when she went there to worship Durga, Krishna was also there. But she told her family that she was going to worship Durga. So she went there to worship Durga, and of course Krishna was there. But her husband was right, what do they say, hot on her heels. He was just like following her there, along with his wonderful mother and sister, Jatila and Kutila. Anyway, because they had suspected something all along, that Krishna was having an affair with Radharani. And so they were getting ready to actually kick Radharani out of Vrindavan and send her to Mathura for safekeeping. So anyway, so they got there, and the gopis, they warned Krishna, Abhimanyu, Jatila, Kutila, they're coming. And so Krishna thought, you know, what can I do? Krishna was in anxiety. So he took on the form of Durga, eight-armed form. And so when Abhimanyu, Jatila, Kutila arrived there, Radharani was worshiping Krishna, but was actually looked like Durga. She was offering obeisances, and they arrived there, and they said, oh, it's nice, you're worshiping Durga. Durga's actually come out of the deities. Isn't that wonderful? And then Durga began to speak. It was Krishna, of course. And Durga said, Krishna said, Krishna Vacha, he said, Abhimanyu is going to die tomorrow. Kamsa and his soldiers are going to come and chop his head off. And Jatila, they all started to beg at Durga, Krishna's feet, and say, Durga, forgive us, please. And Durga said, there's nothing you can do about it. Forget it. He's going to die. Finished. You know, boss. And they begged, is there anything we can do? Why are we suffering? And Durga said, you're suffering because you wanted to send Radharani out of Vrindavan and didn't trust her chastity. She's the most chaste person. So the real way you can get out of this is if you take a vow never to send her out of Vrindavan, and also take a vow never to doubt her chastity. And so they all said, yes, we'll never doubt her again, never doubt her again. And Krishna, as Durga said, yes, then you won't die. We bless you. And then they left, and Krishna and Radharani went on with their pastimes. So anyway, So, anyway, just a little story about Durga. So that's good, Durga Puja. That you can do in Bengal. So anyway, so getting on with the story is that you get Durga. You get misery if you worship Durga without, or Lakshmi actually, without Narayan. So anyway, so that's one point. So Ravana, he got misery. We understand that. So Sita's appearance is quite interesting. Of course, Sita, Lakshmi, is eternally associated with Narayan. Whenever Narayan comes down, Lakshmi comes too. And he comes with all of his associates and energies, Brasha Shakti, Vidaya Vishwi Tesh, Bhabhagi Gyana Balakriya Cha. So he comes down, just like when Krishna appeared, Radharani came down. But the interesting thing is that Lakshmi, or Radharani, who is the original Adi Lakshmi, does not want to look at anyone else or consider even for a second anyone else but Narayan or Krishna as her husband. I mean, this is the most chaste personality. So just like when Radharani appeared, because she didn't want to see anyone else, she appeared and she was blind when she first came down. You know, she appeared on a lotus flower too, just like Sita Devi. So she was completely blind, and her family, you know, Vrishabhana was all upset and everything like that. But Narada Muni said, still do, you know, do the sacrifice for her name giving and invite Krishna to come. Or Mother Yashoda, and she brought Krishna. And so they brought Krishna to the name giving sacrifice, and then Krishna and Radharani crawled up on the lap of Mother Yashoda or Kirtida. And then Radharani smelled Krishna and she opened her eyes for the first time. That's real chastity. That a wife doesn't want to see anyone else but her husband. Do you have any wives like that nowadays? No. You know, blind otherwise. Anyway, so, interesting. That's why women are more intelligent. Anyway, so, the men, they just have eyes open for everybody. Anyway, so, I just want to add that because I know they were upset. I was talking about women being more intelligent. But anyway, so when Sita Devi appeared, it was a very similar type of thing. She wasn't blind, of course. But she first came down as this personality known as Vedavati. And she was meditating on Narayan from her very birth, and she was performing harsh austerities on the top of a mountain in order to have Narayan as her husband. You know, she was just completely devoted. It's a little similar to that story in Vrindavan of Mirabai. Mirabai? You ever heard of Mirabai?
Yeah.
You've heard of Mirabai. When Mirabai was young, you know, she was real young, she asked her parents, who's going to be my husband when I get older? And her parents just jokingly said, what? Krishna. And they gave her a Krishna deed, and she took it seriously. And then, you know, even later on when they did get her married, you know, she wasn't very attentive to her husband. And they all thought that she was hanging around with some other man. Her husband rushed in one day real angry. You know the story? It's really interesting. Her husband was real angry. He thought he was going to find her with another man. So he rushed into the house. Ha! And she just found him worshiping Krishna. He just found her worshiping Krishna. Anyway, so that's real chastity. So Vedavati, she was also completely devoted. She was Sita Devi. But then as she was on the mountain worshiping Narayan, hoping to get Narayan as the husband, this airplane, 747, with Ravana, actually was a pushbook of Vimana, better than a 747, better than an A380, came by. And Ravana had stolen this pushbook of Vimana from Kuvera, his brother. So it came by, and Ravana looked down, and he said, wow, she is beautiful. And he just landed the plane. And he got out and said, hello there, to her. And he said, what are you doing? She said, I'm meditating on Lord Narayan as my husband. And he said, well, look, I got someone better, me. And she said, no, you're ugly. Anyway, no, she didn't say that. But anyway, she said, no way, I'm devoted to Lord Narayan. And so he grabbed her by the hair to try to drag her to the chariot, and she made her hand like a knife blade. And she cut the hair, cut her own hair, you know, like that. And she just began to immolate herself, to burn herself in a fire, sacred fire, yogic fire. And she said to Ravana that I'm going to be reborn in your kingdom and be the cause of your death. And so, she went to ashes. And Ravana thought, yeah, there's no problem. No problem. I can take care of this. It's not going to influence me at all. So anyway, Ravana was going about his Ravana business in Lanka. And then one day, in a pond, a little baby girl appeared in a lotus flower. And he said, uh-oh, maybe that's the girl. He got real nervous when he saw her. And then he said to his associates, take her and throw her in the ocean and kill her. So they took this little baby girl, and then they threw her in the ocean. And, of course, in the ocean you have Varuna, the ocean god. He picked her up, carried her very, very nicely, and gave her to Bhumi, the earth goddess. You know the earth goddess? Bhumi. And Bhumi took her under the earth, put her in a little box like that, and brought her up to where Janaka Maharaj was having this sacrifice, you know, plowing the land. Because for rain, he needed rain or something like that. So he was plowing the land, and then the tip of the plow hit this box. That's why she's called Sita, you know, the plow. Tip of the plow hit the box. He opened it up and found a little baby girl inside. And that was Sita Devi. Pretty interesting. Janaka also has a very interesting history, too. All the kings in his dynasty were named Janaka. Did you know that? Because the original person in his dynasty was named King Nimi. King Nimi had a few problems with his guru. His guru's name was Vasishtha Muni. And he offended his guru by performing a sacrifice while his guru was out getting guru dakshin in the heavenly planets, you know, just because the demigods pay more money than the earth people do. That may be a good idea if we want to collect for that school overdone. Now that I think about it. You know, do you have any contacts with the demigods? You know, like Indra, Varuna? I would like to go up there. Yeah, that would be a great fundraiser. Anyway, so they give mountains of gold. Then I'd be known as Haranya. Haranya means gold. Anyway, so... Haranya Maharaj. Anyway, so Maharaj Nimi was cursed by Vasishtha. You become Nirdeha, you die. Vasishtha left his body, but his body was preserved by the sages. And then at the same time, Maharaj Nimi cursed Vasishtha to die. And so they both, the guru died and the disciple died. That was Guru Dakshin. It's nice guru dakshin, kill your guru. Anyway, so they both died. Vasishtha Muni appeared later on from the summit of Mitra and Varuna. And Maharaj Nimi, he was sort of brought back to life at the end of the sacrifice. But he didn't want to come back to life. He actually wanted to go back to Godhead. So he said, you know, don't bring me back to life. I'm getting the hell out of here. And so what they did is after that, they churned his body and they produced the first Janaka, which means, you know, actually coming from the body, maitya, which means to churn. So they churn. So that's why the city is called Mithila, which means the churning city. It's from maitya. You understand? So they churned his body, you know, genetic engineering or something like that. And then they're expert. You think you're so expert, doctor. You're very proud of your doctor expertise. But then they can actually take genes or churn the body. You can't do that. You can't clone a body. Isn't it? So they could cure diseases, cancer. They didn't need oncologists in those days. So they churned the body, and the first Janaka was born. That's Janaka the first, then was Janaka the second, Janaka the third, Janaka the fourth, fifth, you know, and all the way up to the Janaka who is the father of Sita Devi. It's interesting. Anyway, so Sita Devi was brought up. And Janaka is also one of the Dwadasa Mahajanas. He's one of the 12 great personalities that are authorities on the Vedic literature. So She was brought up in that kingdom, and there was actually this bow of Lord Shiva that was there. That Lord Shiva, of course, is known as Tripurari, because he killed this demon, you know, who was flying all over the world with his bow. Anyway, so the bow was given, and this bow was so heavy, it took like hundreds of people just to roll it. You know, not even to pick it up. Nobody could pick it up. Just to roll it with wheels, you know. You had all the king's soldiers and all the king's men. Like Humpty Dumpty. Anyway, so all the king's soldiers and all the king's men, they would actually pull on ropes, and gradually the bow would actually move a little bit. And the bow was kept in the deity worship room. And so what happened is that one time, like Sita Devi, she was playing with some sort of ball, and she had to get the ball. And she thought, well, there's no stick to actually get the ball, because it was stuck up in the air or something like that. And so she saw the bow, and she picked up the bow very, you know, with her hand, and picked it up like that, and then knocked the ball down, and then went on playing. And but some of the soldiers said that saw that, and they went to King Janaka, and they said, guess what, King Janaka? Little Sita Devi has picked up this bow. And Janaka said, what have you been smoking? It's not possible, you know. You know, have you been, anyway, taking drugs or something like that? So, no, they said, come. And, you know, the bow was actually changed position. She had put it down by then. And then they understood that she had actually picked up the bow. And then he realized that she was a great personality, and the test for her Swayamvara would be that whoever could pick up the bow and string it could actually win her hand. And of course, it was impossible to do it. So then many, many great personalities would come for the Swayamvara. Even Ravana came, there's some description like that, and they couldn't even pick up the bow. I mean, it was just useless. What to speak of stringing it? And then finally, of course, Ram came. Hare Krishna. Oh, she's chanting japa. Very nice. He's become very detached. He looks like a very detached personality. So so Ram just saved this lady Ahalya, because this Ahalya had been cursed by her husband, Gautama Maharishi. Anyway, that's another story. I'm not going to tell that. He came with Vishwamitra Muni after he had, you know, taken care of all the demons and everything like that, the sacrifice, and saved Ahalya, who had been cursed by Gautama Maharishi, and brought her back to life. Okay. And then he entered into the Swayamvara, and then Ram, after some time being told by Vishwamitra Muni, picked up the bow very, very easily, without any problem, went to string it, and the bow broke. And so it was just like, huh? What's going on here? So everybody was wondering what's going on. Later on, he got in trouble with Parashuram because of that. That's another story. But the reason is that the bow broke, actually the bow voluntarily broke. I don't know if any of you know this story. The bow decided to break on its own. And the reason for that is because Rama didn't want to break the bow, but the bow wanted to break, because the bow understood that later on there would be a fight between Ravana and Ram, and Ravana had the weapons of Lord Shiva. So he understood he didn't want to be used against Ram. So he broke voluntarily. The Acharyas talk about that. I don't know if any of you heard that story before. Anyway, the bow broke voluntarily. So so then Sita and Ram got married. Then Ram was exiled to the forest by, you know, his wonderful mother, Kaikeyi, you know, stepmother. Kaikeyi and Dasarath didn't like the whole idea, and Sita just dutifully followed him into the forest. Such a chaste lady. Of course, even when they were in the forest, it's very, very interesting that she carried all of her makeup with her and all of her jewelry. And she didn't carry it. Poor Lakshman had to carry it. So poor Lakshman, he was carrying all this stuff. He didn't even eat the whole time they were in the forest. This poor guy, you know. He had to do all the dirty work, you know, carry Sita's jewelry and makeup and build all the cottages and, you know, eventually try to put Sita into the fire So he didn't want it to, he didn't want to be Ram's younger brother after that birth. And so Ram blessed him that he would always be the older brother after that. So he came back as Balaram later. But Krishna is so funny that even though Krishna is the younger brother, he never listened to Balaram, the older brother. Isn't it? He didn't, Krishna doesn't follow etiquette properly. You know, if you got to pick an example for your life, don't follow Krishna's example. Krishna is a horrible example, isn't it? He's a, you know, he's the worst example of what you should do. But Ram is a good example. Actually, Ram is the idea. That's why people in India, they always talk about Ram. They never talk about Krishna Raj, isn't it? They never talk about Krishna being the king, or they want a king like Krishna. They want a king like Ram. Of course, what they get is kings like Ravana, or prime ministers that are not, maybe not bad as Ravana, but, you know, getting there. So anyway, so Sita followed dutifully into the forest. She was later not kidnapped, but she was taken by Agni, and Maya Sita, as I mentioned before, was the actual one who was kidnapped. Later on, Maya Sita was brought back. Maya Sita entered the fire. The real Sita came out. And then what happened is after they went back to Ayodhya, there was this washerman, Dobiwala was a washerman. And he was complaining about his wife, because his wife, you know, went out for a few extra minutes. And he said, you know, get out of here, you stupid wife. I mean, you can't do that nowadays, actually. Just because your wife goes to the wellspring or something like that, comes back an hour later, you can't reject her. So he said, I'm not like this Lord Ram, you know, henpecked Lord Ram. And when Lord Ram heard this, he actually thought, well, to rule the kingdom properly, to have the trust of the citizens, you know, Sita can't be there. Even Lord Ram was he loved Sita, but he thought the highest duty of a king is the duty to his citizens, higher than the duty to the family, which is really interesting. When one takes the position of king, then the first priority, the duty to the citizens, and you have to relinquish your own personal happiness. That's interesting. A king or a leader in some other respect actually has that particular duty. Because we don't find that with modern day leaders. I mean, they actually not only are considering their own personal happiness more important, but they're actually stealing from the kingdom and putting money in Swiss bank accounts, right? Anyway. So Ram asked Lakshman to drop Sita off in the forest. She didn't know what was going on. You know, they went into the forest, and she thought they were just going for some pilgrimage, you know, just to have a good old picnic in the forest. She was also pregnant at the time. And Lakshman just said, you know, get off the chariot. You're staying here. Go to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. And he couldn't even look. He was crying. He's thinking, what kind of a brother do I have? You know, he exiles his wife, puts her in a fire. You know, this is too much for me. That's why I became very determined not to become the younger brother anymore in the future. He was really fried out by this whole thing. Of course, you know, this is a pastime. And he's God, too. You know, we understand. So she lived in the ashram of Valmiki Muni. She was pregnant. And the brahmacharis in the ashram of Valmiki Muni were pretty agitated because they thought, you know, here's this pregnant lady. You know, who knows? You know, who the man is and everything like that. You know, this Valmiki Muni, he's too liberal. They didn't know it was actually Sita Devi. She was in disguise. They were thinking, this, you know, Gurudev is so liberal. Sometimes I get accused like that too by disciples. They say, you're so liberal. Ooh. You know, use your discrimination, Gurudev. Anyway, so they were talking. It's true. Brahmacharis tend to be conservative, hyper-conservatives. I remember when I was a young brahmachari, I was hyper-conservative, you know. It's horrible. I was simply horrible in those days. But anyway, so the brahmacharis, they're talking behind the guru's back. And then Valmiki, he sort of heard this and he thought, well, I got to do something to prove her chastity. You know, so these brahmacharis will shut their mouths, you know, because they're committing offenses. He was concerned. So he said, all right, we have a lake here. The lake here is called the Shivishagara Lake. And the reason it's called the Shivishagara Lake was that once upon a time there were two birds, Shivi birds, anyway, and like pigeons or something like that. And there was a male bird and a female bird, and the male bird was waiting for his wife one day to come back, flying back, and she came back late. And the male bird said to the female bird, "Hey, you're not chaste. You know, you come back late, who knows what you've been doing?" And the female bird said, Hey buddy, we're birds. Birds don't have some scars, you know. Don't get married, you know, there's no fire sacrifice, you know." And he said, "Yes, I understand that, but we're in an ashram. So we're supposed to be dharmic birds." And she said, "Well, anyway, I was chaste. I didn't run around with any other birds." It's a funny story, actually, because even the birds could talk. And so he said, "Prove it. I want you to fly over this whole lake," which was like 800 miles long or something like that, "without falling in the water." You know, a little pigeon doing that, impossible. So this female pigeon, she began to fly, and she started to drop down to the water, but prayed to the demigods. The demigods helped her fly all over the lake. Interesting story. You ever hear that story before? That's a famous story in the Ramayana, the Shivisagara story. So then Valmiki said to Sita, "All right, you got to do the same thing. You know, if you're actually chaste, you won't get wet. You can fly over this whole lake." So Sita Devi said, "You know, if I'm actually chaste, never thought of anyone else but Lord Ram, let me just fly over the whole lake." And she did. She flew over the whole lake, didn't get wet. And then the brahmacharis had to shut up then. He said, Valmiki Muni said to the brahmacharis, "You see, you rascals? Just shut your mouths." And so they said, "Yes, Guru Dev." But sometimes the Guru Dev has to prove things to them. Anyway, so after that, she gave birth to Lav and Kush, you know, the twin boys, the sons of Lord Ramchandra. We all know that story. They came and recited the Ramayana, which had been recited by Valmiki, to Lord Rama and Lakshman in the kingdom. And eventually, there was some desire to bring Sita Devi back to the kingdom. And Valmiki Muni came and he said to Lord Ram, he said, "I attest to the chastity of Sita Devi. There's no doubt about it." And Lord Ram said, "I accept everything you say, but I want Sita Devi herself to vow to her chastity. You know, I accept, I mean, I don't have any doubts in Sita Devi, but look at all these people here. You know, they're a bunch of rumor-mongering people." That's the problem with a bunch of shooters, isn't it? They just like, boop, 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 talk. Just like you go on the internet nowadays, what happens? There's all sorts of criticism of Vaishnavas, isn't it, on the internet? Ever been on the internet? There's even a webpage called the Vaishnava Ninda Network. You know what Ninda means? Offense. Vaishnava Ninda Network. VNN. So their whole business is to commit offenses against Vaishnavas. If you join conferences, then everybody is going around criticizing Vaishnavas. Not everybody. A lot of people criticizing Vaishnavas. That's why I'm not a member of any of these ridiculous conferences. You know, the name of so-and-so disciple conference, they're actually just like jumping on different Vaishnavas' backs and trying to find fault with them, rather than just talking to the Vaishnava personally and just finding out, you know, why they did something. People are becoming discouraged or even driven out of the movement because of this. So anyway, so Rama said Sita Devi is going to have to attest it to herself. But Sita Devi said, "Well, I'm going to prove it for you." She said, "You know, if I have always been chaste, never thought of anyone, even for one billionth of a second other than Lord Ram, let Mother Earth come and take me away from this place. You know, I've had it. You're too much, isn't it? Isn't it? It's too much. You know, this is, you know, I love Ram, but, you know, living in this world is just like a disaster area." And so the earth opened up like that. Bhumi came out. She said, "You know, my dear daughter, come with me. You don't belong here anymore. They don't appreciate you." And then they took Sita Devi away, and that was it. That was the end of Sita Devi's pastimes. But the actual story explained by the Acharyas is that Sita Devi, she didn't leave because she was frustrated. In the movie, it seems like that. But she actually left because she understood to serve Lord Ram, to prove her chastity, that was the only thing that people would accept. You understand? They wouldn't accept her saying she was chaste. The only thing they would accept was some supernatural phenomena, like the earth opening up. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, so that's the story about the Sita Devi. And then, I don't know if we have time for everything else. So, of course, Janavamata, she is the wife of Lord Nityananda. Janavamata and Vasudha, they were actually sisters. And they were married to Lord Nityananda. Let's see, there's some information here I wrote down. Oh yeah, Suryadas Sarakayala was their father. And it's described in the Gauri Ganadesh Dipika that Karpi Karnapur says, Nityananda's consorts, Vasudeva and Janavadevi, are expansions of Varuna and Revati. Those are the two wives of Lord Balaram. You understand? Lord Balaram had some wives, so Revati was one wife, and Varuna, you know, the Varuni beverage? She's the personification of the Varuni beverage, the intoxication, bona fide intoxication, not like they drink in the French Quarter. It's not the same as bourbon, anyway. Can you imagine? Such a crazy place. Bourbon Street? You know, can you imagine what a stupid name for a street? Huh? It's like calling Mode of Ignorance Street, you know. Dog Street. Anyway. So anyway, so there's another explanation. They say that Janavamata is an incarnation of Srimati Anangamanjari. That's another understanding. Of course, Anangamanjari is the younger sister of Srimati Radharani in Krishna Leela. Mm. And they also say Vasudha is also like an expansion of Anangamanjari. Mm. So their father, Suryadas, arranged the marriage with Lord Nityananda. Actually, he had a dream about it before the marriage took place. So, let's see, arrange the marriage. There's some explanation of the marriage here. We don't really have time to tell the whole story, but there's a lot of details that I have here. There's actually an elaborate description of the marriage ceremony. Yes, Sachimata embraced both Janava and Vasudha after the marriage. Of course, the main thing to understand is that Janavamata was actually, practically speaking, the head of the Vaishnavas after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And these great personalities such as Srinivasacharya and Arathamadas Thakur and Shyamananda, they actually accepted her instructions and her guidance. And she was a guru. She had many different disciples. There's one disciple in particular named Nityananda. She gave a disciple that name. And that disciple wrote many literatures describing her pastimes, particularly the pastime when she went to the Ketri Gram festival. The Ketri Gram festival was the festival of the appearance day of Lord Nityananda, in which they installed the deities, Narottamadas Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and Shyamananda. They installed the deities there. A wonderful festival. It's described as the first big Gaur Purnima festival in Ketri Gram. And Sachimata, Sachimata was there too? Let's see. Oh no, Sachimata was not there. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj, so many devotees were there at the same time. And she acted as the host and cooked for all the devotees at this festival, which is really nice. Let's see. Anything else? She went to Vrindavan and had the association of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, particularly Jiva Goswami. And she was very much respected by them. I think that's all we have time for with Janavamata. So anyone have any questions about Janavamata? Any questions about Janavamata? Or any more points?
She actually initiated disciples?
Yeah, she actually initiated disciples. And Virachandra, or Virchandra, you know, the son of Lord Nityananda, was actually Vasudha's son, but she was taken care of by Janavamata. So Janavamata didn't have any children, whereas Vasudha had the child, Lord Virachan, who's considered an expansion of Lord Nityananda. Yeah. It's sometimes called Virchandra, or in Bengali, Virchandra. Just like my name in Sanskrit is Vira Krishna Goswami, but in Bengali it's Bir. So Prabhupada gave me my name in Bengali rather than Sanskrit. Interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada wrote the name with a B when he wrote my name. So, anybody else have any stories about... let me just read this. This is finally about her. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays at the lotus feet of Sri Janavamata. This is his prayer. Having fallen into this ocean of misery, my life is a bewilderment, and I do not know how to reach its shore, nor even where to search for it. All my efforts, karma, are useless. All my knowledge, jnana, is useless, as are mysticism, yoga, austerity, religious penance, and mundane piety. None of these processes has any power to rescue me. I am weak, helpless. I don't know how to swim across the ocean of nescience. Who will deliver me from this dangerous predicament? Within this dangerous ocean of material existence, I see the crocodiles of sense gratification. What a terrible sight. Within this ocean, I am tossed about by the turbulent waves, which constantly boil and churn like a ship without a rudder. The impulses and urges that I have acquired from my previous births are like the wind that blows the ship in all directions. My mind is unsteady. The ship has no captain, no direction. I weep in despair, seeing that I cannot cross this ocean of misery. O Janava Devi, today, by the power of your divine qualities, be merciful to this servant of yours. So this is his prayer on her appearance day. Dispel this illusion which torments me and relieve me of the anguish of material existence. Let me take shelter at your lotus feet, for in this way I shall certainly cross over the ocean of birth and death. You are the Nityananda Shakti, the divine energy of Nityananda himself. You are the guru of Krishna Bhakti. Be merciful to me and grant me the shade at your holy lotus feet, which are like the wish-fulfilling tree. You have delivered countless abominable sinners. Please deliver me in the same way. Today this lowly sinner falls at your holy feet, praying for your mercy. That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer at the lotus feet of Janavamata. So it's just one final thing. In Madhu Pandit, as far as Madhu Pandit, whose disappearance today, he's not mentioned really in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, he's mentioned. It says that Gopinath manifested himself directly to him. Let's see, Gopinathji. So Madhu Pandit became the servant of Gopinath. See what else about Madhu Pandit, and that's it. Oh yeah, when Srinivas Acharya and his associates were preparing to depart from Vrindavan Dham in the bullock cart of books, Madhu Pandit presented him the flower garland of Sri Gopinath Ji as his blessing. Madhu Pandit was the disciple of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So that's Madhu Pandit. So he was worshiping the deity of Gopinath. He's just like we have this prayer, you know, about the temples in Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami Pradana Hey, Radha Damodara. You know that song? Yeah. Radha Damodara Radhe. So when you sing Radha Gopinath, like that, about Radha Gopinath, let's say Madhu Pandit Pranadana Hey, Radha Gopinatha, Radha Gopinatha, Radhe. So he's the one who installed or started the temple of Radha Gopinath in Vrindavan, famous temple in Vrindavan. So any questions or comments about anything? Yes. In Radhakund, there's actually a nice bathing ghat, and it's shielded so she can bathe privately. I don't know if...
Yeah,
You've gone there. You've seen it. It's right near the Samadhi of Raghunath Das Goswami at Radhakund. Anyone else has been there? No one else has been to Radhakund here? You never went to, you went there. But it's a very, very nice place at Radhakund. You go past the Samadhi of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, down some steps towards the Radhakund, and then to the right. I can picture very, because, you know, I live there. And then to the right, and then you'll see this nice, like, walled-off area, you know, with a little fence around it, that protrudes into Radhakund. And there's a little, sort of like a little temple there, and then you go around, circumambulate the tree, and then there's a stairway down, an enclosed stairway down to the Radhakund, where Janabhamata used to take her bath. Anyone else seen that? No? You've been there. I remember all these things very clearly. So, any other questions or comments? If not, I think it's time to... All glories to His divine grace. Shiva Prabhupada, Shiva Prabhupada, Ki Jai.